The Jamison family, Bobby, Sherilyn, and their six-year-old daughter Madison, were in a period of transition and somewhat troubling circumstances just before their disappearance in early October 2009. When their vehicle was found abandoned with a family dog and $32,000 left inside, many widespread searches were conducted that resulted in not one shred of evidence being uncovered. 3 years later, two hunters discovered the family's badly decomposed remains a mere 2.7 miles from the location where their truck had been discovered years prior. What happened to this family? Were all three murdered, or did mental illness drive one of them to do something awful? Is there another possibility? You're listening to Creep It Real, and today we cover the Jamison family's disappearance and murders.
Creep It Real is a weekly podcast where we present our theories of the subjects we cover based on our interest and research. Some material may be graphic and disturbing, so proceed with caution.
People are probably thinking we're crazy.
Let them think.
Okay, so anyway. Hey, everybody. It's us. We're here.
Hi.
Hello.
We're here. Again.
Getting ahead of it this time, I feel. I'm like, we're getting ahead. I don't know if that's true. That said, I have to say, I was listening to Astonishing Legends, and they were like, oh, we're so far ahead right now. We're recording 3 days before it's released. And I was like, I totally can understand that feeling. So
yes.
I was like, oh, okay. You know, they're doing it. So they're not super ahead. So I was like, oh, whew. Okay. Anyway, so today we're talking about the Jamison family that as originally was a disappearance that turned into actual the deaths of all three of these family members. I was hoping it was going to be a little break from the truly horrific stuff we were talking about last week, but it's really pretty much of we were just talking about this together. You know, not recording, how much of a depressing bummer this story is. Super dark and just not.
It is a bummer.
Yeah.
Like the circumstances surrounding it, you're like, well, dang.
Yeah.
Stinks.
And I have so many theories in my head that I'm like, I don't really know. I'll think, okay, it's this. And then I'm like, well, you know, I read something else or I think about something else. I'm like, I don't know. So let's get into it because it is super interesting. So Bobby Dale, Sherilyn, and Madison Jamison were a family living at a beautiful lakeside property in Eufaula, Oklahoma, who disappeared around October 9th, 2009. And at the time of their disappearance, the family had gone to look around at a 40-acre property that they were considering purchasing. It was in the secluded San Bois Mountains in Latimer County, Oklahoma, near a city called Red Oak. On October 9th, a local landowner on the mountain spoke to the Jamisons, who told him that they had also come the day prior. This neighbor said that they did not indicate that they were there to meet with anyone, and he seemed honest and upfront to the police and other investigators who spoke to him. They said that he seemed anxious for another search to be conducted and the family to be found and was concerned with the disappearance of a family so close to his home. So they had been to the mountain property both on October 8th and October 9th, and they also stopped at the same gas station both days to eat lunch and had the same waitress who saw them on both occasions. And this led to rumors that they were coming the second day to meet with someone regarding the purchase of a property, also that it would explain the $32,000 that is found in their vehicle. The real estate agent who typically showed the property said that Bobby told her he didn't want to trouble her with coming out to show the property to them and that they were just going to go and wander around by themselves. On October 17th, somewhere between 8 to 10 days after the family's last contact with anyone, their truck was found abandoned on a crude dirt road leading down the mountain. Its doors were all locked, and the deputy had to break the rear driver's side window to open the vehicle, and its tires were extremely muddy. Inside the car was the family dog Maisie, who was barely clinging to life and had survived in the car by eating her own feces. Along with the dog, the family's coats were discovered, along with their IDs, their wallets, which both contained a couple $100s, a spare truck key that was left in the ignition, an 11-page letter that Sherilyn wrote about Bobby where she called him a hermit, and a bag containing $32,000 cash, which I mentioned just a second ago. Both the sheriff and Sherilyn's mother have stated publicly that they believe the truck to appear as though it were forced to a stop by another party, which would explain their leaving all their belongings and the considerable amount of cash in their car. We should also note here that a landowner near this property saw the abandoned truck in the days after the family's disappearance and noted that there were footprints leading from the truck to some rocks where a photo of Madison had been taken and found later, and then went back to the truck, and then there was a second set of tire prints beside the car that seemed fresh. This suggested that the family merely got out of the truck to take the photo as they were heading back down the mountain to leave, and perhaps another vehicle came that made them abruptly leave their vehicle again. While Maisie was found, there was no sign of the Jamesons, as well as Sherilyn's .22 pistol and a tan 1950 suitcase, both of which they had been recorded loading into the truck on the family's security footage of them packing their truck up for the journey to go look at the land. Sheriff Israel Beauchamp stated about the briefcase.
He said, "I think it might have held a lot of cash. I've gone back and forth on this thing, but my latest theory, based on how the truck was parked and what was found in the truck, I think they were forced to stop and got out of the truck to meet someone they recognized, and I think they either left willingly or were forced."
That theory to me seems to be the most logical, as far as when I see the picture of their truck and then just the circumstances, like why every single thing was left in the car, including their dog.
Well, a lot of documentaries have stated that the little girl, Madison, really let the dog out of her sight. That was her dog, and she was pretty on top of taking care of it.
Yeah.
So leaving your dog in there to die doesn't sound...
Yeah, and that just doesn't seem...
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we'll get further into it, but they weren't necessarily super 100% mentally stable.
No,
so
a lot of evidence pointing to that.
There are... Yeah. And so, you know, that does put into question some of the things, but you can't predict a person who's not mentally stable's actions, you know, or try to make a logical sense out of them. So, anyway.
Beauchamp immediately launched multiple thorough searches of the area and uncovered no traces of the missing family. The search included drones, 16 teams of tracker dogs, hundreds of police and volunteers, some on horseback, and they found absolutely nothing.
Which that seems odd to me.
Oh, I know. You know, like when we covered Brandon Lawson, they really didn't put much effort into the searches, which, like, no wonder you didn't find anything. But they spent, what, 9 months scouring the area?
Right. A lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a lot of different searches and a lot of different resources. So, especially considering what we find out later, I find that to just be an interesting aspect of the story. They did, I know that, like, the cadaver dogs did kind of mark on a water tower that was nearby, and that was kind of the only place they did, but they emptied it out and there wasn't anything in there, so.
Yeah, they said that the dogs hit pretty hard on that, and it wasn't a small water tower, it was pretty large.
Yeah.
When we still don't know why the dogs hit on that. And not anywhere else.
Right. It's interesting. Definitely.
Beauchamp also consulted with 12 FBI agents, 3 OSBI agents, a troop of Oklahoma Highway Patrol, countless private investigators, and even consulted with psychics due to what he explained was sheer desperation.
Yeah, he was really embarrassed.
Yeah. It would be over 4 years before a pair of hunters would discover the family's skeletal remains in a remote location 2.7 miles from the location where their truck had been discovered years prior on November 15th to 16th, 2013. I don't think 2.7 miles is, like, very far off. You know, they should, if they were to find something during their 9 month search, they would have found, that's not like they're hundreds of miles away.
Yeah. So this is really, this is like the exact conditions that the missing 411 stories are. They all have the same circumstances or similar circumstances. And it's like places that have been like thoroughly searched, and then the bodies are found in places that have been searched multiple times. And it's like, it seems so unlikely that that many cases are just search dog error or something, you know? Like, I think that there's got to be some reason. And it might just be serial killers that are everywhere moving bodies around. Who knows? But it could also be a freaking portal or some dimensional thing. We don't know. Something weird could happen.
Probably just Sasquatch. Honestly, that's the case right there.
I do wonder if that's the theory that most people come up with this missing 411 stuff, but I'm just not so sure about that. Anyway.
The remains of all three family members laid side by side in the dirt at the bottom of a mountainside. This position is indicative of a homicide, though the police stated they did not believe the deaths to be a result of foul play. Okay.
Now that does seem, in this situation, I'm not real too hard on the police here, because they seem to have done a pretty good job off the bat. But I find it to be very strange then, after the bodies were discovered, it shifts a bit, because I'm like, how are you gonna say that they were like lined up face down in the dirt
side by side,
and that isn't anything suspicious? Yeah, because there's little reason, unless there, I mean, there's a few reasons for that, but none of them are not foul play, you know what I mean? It seems very, very strange.
Well,
that they would say that.
It was also said that the father, Bobby, was pretty good at being outdoors. Like, he wasn't totally helpless, you know, out, like, he knew what he was doing. So if you were just 2.7 miles away from your truck, I don't see why you would just fall over and die.
Right. Also, another point to mention is that while this is an Oklahoma mountain, quote unquote mountain, it's not really like this huge mountain, you know?
Well, didn't they say that the hunters were on four-wheelers?
I don't remember that part, but it might be true.
I was gonna say, if they were on four-wheelers, I mean, they are all-terrain vehicles, but they're not gonna be four-wheeling into, like, some rock mountain cliff face. Still has to be accessible.
They say it's rough terrain. It's probably, you know, decently difficult, but not you're scaling a true mountain.
They were so badly decomposed that a cause of death could not be ascertained, but there was a notable hole in Bobby's skull that the coroner could not determine to be a gunshot, though it was possible. There was a lot of speculation that this was caused by an animal, and I don't think it was. It was just a singular hole.
I'm like, what animal would really be able to do that? A woodpecker? I mean, I can't even think of anything. I really can't. Is there a bird with some sort of beak that can make a hole and suck out a brain?
That would be the, like, most metal bird ever, but...
That's an alien, I think.
Was this the result of foul play, all three individuals succumbing to the elements, or something else?
Good question.
I have my theory, but we'll discuss it later.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear because I have no idea what your theory is.
It's a secret surprise. So, in years leading up to the family's disappearance, they had been dealing with some serious issues, both mental and physical. Bobby had been in a serious car accident, which left him injured with chronic pain that medication seemed to do little to relieve. He did have a prescription for painkillers and relied heavily on the little relief they brought him. However, he was also very depressed due to these circumstances.
Understandable.
Cheryl Lynn was also experiencing some issues herself with bipolar disorder, and according to her mother, who lived with the family for a few months span the year prior to their disappearance, she had gone from a strong-willed woman to being extremely paranoid and illogical. The pair had both lost significant weight in the months prior to October. In the months leading up to their disappearance, Bobby was also involved in a bitter lawsuit with his father, Bob Sr. The lawsuit was in regards to the fact that Bobby had worked at his father's gas station for years under the premise that he would one day inherit half interest, only to have his father sell the gas station and leave him nothing. What a jerk
move, man.
Yeah.
Sorry.
His dad is an unsavory character throughout this whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That same month, Bobby filed a protective order against his father, claiming the man tried to run him over and also threatened to kill his family.
Yeah, he sounds like a real damn winner.
He had said that his father had dealings with, like, drug dealers and biker gangs and...
Oh, yeah.
Anything and everything between here.
Cool.
We should also note here that Bobby's mother, Starla, had filed for divorce a few months prior to Bobby's lawsuit and also filed a protective order against Bob Sr. She claimed he was a dangerous man and even had security cameras installed at the Jamesons' home for their protection, specifically due to Bob Sr.'s threatening nature. So they take him pretty serious. Your own mother gets your own security system installed to surveillance your home.
Yeah, either they're lying just to get this dude in trouble, or this dude is really a very bad guy. Yeah, like, who? Think about your grandpa threatening to kill you.
Oh, I know.
What a gem.
You got me in a real pickle here. So, again, there were rumors that he was involved heavily in some shady business dealings that were both legal and illegal. We should also note that Bob Sr. died the December following the Jamesons' disappearance and had been residing in a nursing facility when the incident took place.
I'm kind of like, what?
Ew, can you imagine being the caretaker for this jerk man?
This old ass. on top of the fact that I'm kind of like, okay, wait a second. Was he in the nursing home whenever they filed these protective orders against him? Is that why it was dismissed?
Yeah.
Because, like, I can kind of understand, but then I'm wondering, I don't know, that seems odd, unless it was before he went into the nursing home and he, like, made a quick turn for the worse or something.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, because if he's getting to where he needs to be in a nursing home, I highly doubt he's loading up his truck to go over to his family's house and kill him.
Yeah. Who knows? But I guess he would still have connections to some unsavory characters.
Yeah.
Maybe he could pay somebody to do this. Who knows?
Due to these circumstances, the police did not think he was involved in the family's disappearance. Though an interesting fact in this case is that Bob Sr.'s will left his entire estate to Madison, and a settlement for his ex-wife and siblings was partially distributed while the Jamesons were still missing and their bodies not yet found to be declared dead.
Yeah, so his dad, Bobby's dad, had Madison as like the sole inheritor of his entire estate. And after they went missing, his ex-wife and like I think his two siblings all became the inheritors. I think that's how you would say it. And they got money distributed to them before Madison's body was ever found or she was declared dead. So that is slightly suspicious.
I was gonna say, how convenient that you leave your entire inheritance to a 6-year-old girl and then she goes missing. What is she gonna do with an estate?
That just seems really very suspicious, in my opinion. Who knows? I don't know. I really don't. Another questionable relationship that the family had arose in the police investigation, which was that there was a handyman that the family hired to help with tasks around the house due to Bobby's inability to do so from the injuries that he sustained in his car accident. And they gave this handyman a room at their home that he could live in exchange for his services around the home. I really don't remember if they actually made him pay anything or not, but
there was never found mention of like salary or anything, no.
No? Okay. So I think it was kind of like an exchange kind of deal. And I think I read that they actually found him through Craigslist or a newspaper ad or something. That seems less than a little sketchy for my tastes. But after a few weeks went by, the man began to show his true colors and started espousing racist beliefs and deriding Cheryl Lynn due to her being part Native American. And she got her .22 caliber pistol that she kept in the home and, side note, had bought recently in a kind of an informal purchase in the year prior. So she forced this dude to leave at gunpoint. And so there's a lot of talk about reported super white supremacist, not super white supremacist, white supremacist activity in the area of the mountains where they were looking to purchase that land, in the area where they lived. And obviously this guy was being racist against her. And apparently a lot of people think that if you do something like that to one of these white supremacists, they're not going to handle it very well. And while they may not come and get you, you know, they have friends that aren't going to put up with that either. Because the investigators thought they had their first good lead. And once they questioned the guy, apparently he had a good alibi and he was totally cleared of suspicion.
He was in jail.
Oh, he was in jail when it happened?
Yeah.
Okay. So he was in jail, but there are people that say, you know, he could have friends that want to avenge that situation.
Oh, yeah.
Because he sounds like a real winner, too. There's a lot of really solid people going around in this story.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting?
What?
It was interesting because I was reading into it and they're saying this area of Oklahoma is like plagued with weird cults and KKK activity.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Nebraska, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Why is there so much wild stuff going on in these states?
I guess it's just really more desolate, unpopulated areas. Though, you know what? When I was looking into Nebraska population, because I had made like some offhanded remark about, you know, people calling into the radio station was like the whole state or something. But anyway, there was like, they have millions of people that live there. So
really?
Yeah. So like it's the population in 1990 was 2,200,000 or something. So anyway,
in the whole state?
In the whole state. Yeah.
Okay.
But still more than I thought. I was legit like, it's Wyoming. So it's not. But you know, there are a lot of rural areas in both of these states. And they're also not, Oklahoma's not the wealthiest of states. I'm not saying that there aren't, you know, wealthy areas, but it's not on a whole the richest state in the United States. Anyway, another interesting aspect of this case is that the Jamesons had spoken to the pastor at their Seventh-day Adventist church, Gary Brandon, on separate occasions and separately from each other about spirits that they felt resided in their home. They said that there were two adults and two children, and the children were named Michael and Emily, and while they all had experiences with these spirits, Madison on the regular was speaking to especially this young spirit girl named Emily. So they told him that they felt they were involved in spiritual warfare, and Bobby even requested special bullets from his pastor in which to shoot the entities.
Okay.
Do what?
All right, then.
It's like, have you ever seen the show Supernatural? He's been watching too much Supernatural. So at the same time, Cheryl Lynn began to investigate if the home was buried on a sacred Native American burial ground. And Madison had been diagnosed with ADHD, and the Jamesons felt that she was what they called an indigo child, which is a child with extraordinary gifts to see and hear things that regular people cannot, and further other things that I didn't look into too far because, you know, whatever. Believe what you want, everyone. But, you know.
I have my theories about this whole situation, too. We'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay. I was like, let's hear them.
No.
Okay. Later. So although the family attended the Seventh-day Adventist church, and one of their fellow church members was actually supposed to come with them to view the property that day, but I read they couldn't join them at the last minute. But I didn't really hear a lot more about that, because I'm thinking, if there was actually supposed to be somebody coming with them, that would, at least you would think it would dispel some of the theories.
Yeah.
But did they tell her not to come, or did she choose not to come? Because what I read is she just couldn't make it at the last minute. So who knows? Upon the search conducted at their lakefront property, investigators supposedly discovered a satanic Bible that the family had obtained in order to rid the home of the presences that they spoke to their pastor about. According to Cheryl Lynn's best friend, Nikki Scheinold, both women were interested in witches and witchcraft, and they bought a witch's Bible, which was left out on the coffee table, and she said it was just for fun. I don't know. Whatever they were wanting to do, you know.
You mentioned how Cheryl Lynn liked people to think that she was crazy, so
no.
That they just kind of stayed away from her.
No.
Okay, so Cheryl Lynn, I think it was her sister or her mom, someone had said, or maybe it was even Nikki, that Cheryl Lynn liked to come off as crazy to her neighbors and people in the town because it meant that they would leave her alone. So her mom actually laughed off this whole thing when Cheryl Lynn was like claiming to be a witch. But I don't know. I think she kind of took it seriously. I don't think you go to these lengths to come off as too crazy, but I don't know.
I'm just wondering if making yourself look crazy really makes people leave you alone. I would think...
I would make more curious.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, I think you're working against yourself here, because I really don't think if you're going around acting really just out of your mind that people are going to just be like, steer clear of that one. They're going to be like, let's look in our windows, you know?
Yeah.
Scheinold also claims that, as crazy as it sounds, that the Jamesons' home was haunted, and she experienced this on several occasions. She said that once she saw a dark mist emerge down the stairs and it really scared her, and that when you were in the house, it left you feeling extremely dark and depressed. I mean, I'll say reading the story has made me feel a little dark and depressed, but
yeah,
maybe these people's lives just did that to you. I don't know. She also claimed that on a number of occasions, Bobby, who was usually a very gentle person, would come at her aggressively with dead black eyes. And again, I think she may be watching too much Supernatural.
Yeah. Also, I don't. One thing about her friend, I think this is honestly. I'll just say one of my thoughts right now.
Okay.
I think it was two women bored, kind of like her husband. If she, you know, she said he was a hermit, kind of a loner type thing. I think it was two women feeding off of each other. I think possibly when her friend came over, it was just like them feeding off each other. Like, oh, it's so haunted. Oh, I saw it. Like, what was that? Did you hear that noise? Oh my God. Like, I think her friend was like a bad influence, was kind of egging it on.
Yeah.
Honestly. Like,
it got cold over here.
Yeah. The ghost poops.
Did you just say that you got the ghost poops, or did I hear you wrong?
Well, no, because remember when you were telling me that P was in the bathroom going,
Oh, yeah. He does do that. He does. After that one time where I was like, I heard something. There was something there. And he was like, I was in the bathroom. And I was like, I don't know if it was you. I think you were gone. He's like, no, it was me. And I'm like, okay. And then now anytime I'm recording and he goes to the bathroom, he's ghost noising it. Yeah. It is interesting because you pick up – with a microphone, like, picks up things in a weird way. So, you know, I'll hear birds chirping or something, but it doesn't quite sound that way. Anyway, I'm very skeptical about the noises I hear on my recordings now. That's why I'm like – when people are like, I heard something on it. I'm like, no, you didn't. It's going through, like, 17 different crappy internet connections. One day we're going to get it really tightened up, though.
Tightened up. I'll be out of my fishbowl.
Yeah. One day you'll get out of that fishbowl. Okay, here we go. According to Nikki, Cheryl Lynn would leave notes around the house saying, get out, Satan, which was her way of dealing with the presence, which I'm sure, you know, that's a really effective, effective way to go about it.
Yeah. I left a passive-aggressive note. Should work.
Satan, when are you going to clean these dishes? I used to read those passive-aggressive notes, that website, when I was working at this construction company. Oh my gosh. It would...
I didn't look that up.
Oh, you didn't know?
I didn't know this was a thing.
Oh, shoot. It's a thing. It was a thing. I mean, it might. Okay. I think it's probably still a thing, but it was definitely a thing at one point. So the Jamesons had a storage container, which they were claiming they were going to use as a home whenever they moved to that property that they were going to look at. which I don't even know what to think about that. I almost think that she was kind of just in some sort of bipolar episode and had this idea that they were going to go live in the storage container because she was like paranoid or something, and I don't know.
I've seen people do that and make them into those tiny yes. homes, but it's not just packing it up and taking no. it somewhere and dumping it. It's like a lot of work goes into it and planning.
Exactly.
So kind of sound like they were all in the middle of some manic episode.
Well, I was gonna say, so did you read ever that they were actually living in that storage container at the lake house?
I don't know, because they had a nice house. I read, like, it was a nice property. Yeah. Nice house.
It was like, it was supposed to be really nice,
not some shack. Yeah,
but I read a couple different places, and there's so much different always, like there is on everything, but I read a couple places that they were actually living in that at the end,
well,
in, at their house. But I don't know if that's true.
It would make sense if they were having these paranoid, haunting things. They right. thought their house was like being taken over. They, you know what I mean? So
yeah, they would go out and sleep in this.
It's possible. Yeah. It sounds possible. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That does make sense. So on this storage container, there was a message that was supposedly spray painted by Sherilyn that said, "Three cats killed to date by people in this area. Witches don't like their black cat being killed." Now, I'm pretty sure that was verified to have been written by Sherilyn. I really am not positive, but I think that's pretty much unanimous about that little spray painted message that she said it, because apparently there were multiple cats that they had owned that they said were being poisoned by neighbors. Again, were the cats completely disappearing, or were they, because that's what I was wondering. I was like, were they just disappearing? Is there just coyotes and mountain lions around that are just snatching these cats up, or are they finding dead poisoned bodies of cats? There were claims in the town that she was a witch, and I'm sure that was only fueled by her telling everybody that she was.
Right.
Also, I did read that she was kind of wanting to give the impression that she was, and that's why she would spray paint things like that on their storage container. Now, Sherilyn's mother says that she thinks that they became the target of a dangerous cult, which was one of many in the mountainous area they went to go look at their property. Now, who really knows? But this claim is somewhat supported by an article in the newspaper The Oklahoman in 1993. It was around the time that the Branch Davidian complex whole situation happened.
Whoa.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. Well, also, it's now only an hour away from me. But anyway, that story really has always fascinated the crap out of me. And becoming an adult and looking further into it and realizing that it wasn't exactly how I thought it went down, I'm like, damn, dude. Actually, that's one that I haven't even thought about covering. That's exciting to think about covering.
Yeah.
Anyway. Oh, in the Oklahoma, a U.S. Marshal stated that some cults have found a home in eastern Oklahoma and some are extreme. I'm sure that's the case. And I'm sure, like we said, it's probably a great deal just a bunch of white supremacists living in the mountains. Or who knows who else, though. So clearly, this cult situation, it's only speculation. There's not really any evidence for that, but who knows. So when the police searched the house, they found another letter written by Sherilyn that they described as her really dwelling on the spiritual realm of death, and that the family definitely seemed kind of obsessed with death. So that's not a real great sign.
No.
When you think about the situation that follows, but you know.
Although the speculation that drugs were involved in the disappearance of the family in one way or another, the search conducted at their property and inside their vehicle produced no traces of drugs or paraphernalia, which is really odd to me because their behavior is, it just screams drug addict.
Yeah.
Though we have reports that the home was cleaned before and after the police search, so it is possible that a family member or friend removed these things from the residence before the police could find it, which is interesting because yeah. I heard someone saying, well, maybe they were just really particular about their drug use and cleaning up and keeping it in a nice... I'm like, drug addicts don't care. I have never met like a meth head or heroin addict that's like, well, wait a minute. Let me clean up my setup real quick here and get my drugs out of the way. Like, no. And if you're yeah. this spun out...
No.
And if they're on drugs, they are spun out. The last thing they're going to do is, you know, clean up their drug mess.
Yeah. I mean, I had an unfortunate... Well, I don't know if it's... Well, it is unfortunate. One of my best friends lived with her boyfriend, and he had somebody move in with them, and that guy did heroin. Yes. We would come home from going to eat dinner, and he would be passed out on the couch with, like, a needle stuck in his arm. Ugh. So I don't think that's a real concern. And, you know, like you said, I just don't think that's... Though I do think it's definitely possible that somebody came and cleaned up.
Yeah.
You know, that joke from, like, a million different movies, or you have to get my porn out of the house before
clear my search history if I die.
So, you know, there might have been a friend or something that was like, oh no, we can't let him find the meth or whatever. But At the same time, Bobby was on painkillers, and opioids are probably giving you a much different experience than meth. You know, it's essentially him doing heroin. So that's really, I think, probably what he was, if he was addicted to drugs, that's likely what it was.
Well, and Sherilyn was on prescription medication for her bipolar disorder, but it is reported that a lot of times when she would start feeling better, she would think she was cured, so she would go off her medication.
Yeah.
And didn't realize it was the medication that was making her feel better.
Right.
So
from what I've read, when people are in like a high cycle, they will stop taking their medication, like you said, Sherilyn did. And then whenever they're low, they'll start taking it again. But because they haven't actually been consistently taking it, it actually has detrimental effects to their mental state and can actually make their depression and bipolar symptoms even worse. And that's been shown in studies case after case. So if that's the case, it only appears like they were both in a seriously bad mental state at the time that this happened, for sure.
Well, how many times have we heard about people being prescribed pain medication, you know, opiates, and they can't? And these, I mean, they could fall on hard times financially, and that's what happens to people. They can't afford their pain med anymore. And if he was like in such bad pain to where even his opiates weren't providing complete relief, who's to say he didn't go for the cheaper option and just go buy street heroin?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible.
That happens every day to people.
It's actually something like 15 to 35% of people who have chronic pain and are prescribed pain medications get addicted to it. So it's like a fairly significant percentage of people that do.
I did want to mention, he has his pain meds. Who knows what else? She has her medication. If she's on and off things and not in a good mental state, what if she's mixing medication or, you know, taking other pills? It's just, there's so many routes you can go down with this.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
Either way, both of them are suffering mentally.
Big time.
So Sherilyn's mother said that in the summer before the family disappeared, they are experiencing some financial difficulty, a fact contradicting their beautiful home, newer model vehicles, timeshare in Mexico, and multiple timeshares across the U.S., which also contradict the fact that both Sherilyn and Bobby were on disability.
Yeah, a lot of strange circumstances here.
Yeah, and it has been said that they were scammers.
Yeah.
That's how they made their money. Uh-huh. So maybe they, I don't know.
They did something.
According to Sherilyn's mother, Bobby told her that he knew where he could get the money they needed, but wouldn't involve her.
And her being Sherilyn.
Yeah, though she also stated that if the couple was involved in drug activity, she never saw any. I mean, it could have been something else.
Yeah.
They were scammers. Maybe they got in business with the wrong people, you know? So.
Well, I mean, they were involved in, like, the investigators came to the conclusion that they were scammers because they had, you know, as we've seen in millions of other cases, they're living a lifestyle that exceeds their income, especially when they're on disability, obviously. And they were involved as plaintiffs in multiple lawsuits. So it seemed like they were, like, sue crazy, you know?
Yeah.
So that might be part
of
it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So Sherilyn's mother actually lived with the couple from March to June and said that is when she began to notice extreme changes in Sherilyn, stating that one day she drove her to Oklahoma City and told her to get out of the car on the side of the road.
Oh.
Sherilyn was admittingly bipolar and would at times go off her meds according to the family.
As we said already.
Yeah. As Ashley mentioned before, there's a lot of medical evidence showing that, you know, when you go on and off your medication like that, when you have bipolar disorder, it kind of creates more problems, which definitely would explain her odd behavior leading up to the disappearance.
Yeah. I mean, and that can also, that could be the reason for possibly seeing things in her home, you know, and hearing things. And you can begin to have shared delusions too.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't want to sit here and tell everybody who has experienced some sort of paranormal situation that I'm not trying to delegitimize your story here. I'm just saying in this situation, it does seem like she's having a really bad mental breakdown. She had some serious mental issues going on, and all of these issues conflating together could possibly also explain her seeing things that may not be there.
What's funny, you mentioned that you can share the illusion because of one of the fringe theories that gets brought up about, it's basically shared craziness.
Yeah.
But then, again, I said, I think her friend Nikki was in a great influence. And if Sherilyn was in this fragile state mentally and her dumb friend was just trying to thrill seek in this boring, secluded town.
Yeah.
Nikki, go fly a kite. Bobby's mother, Starlet, said that they had settled out of court regarding a lawsuit in 2005 against the other driver in Bobby's car accident for $64,000, which the couple split, perhaps accounting for the $32,000 found in the vehicle.
I'm sorry, can I interrupt you? Because you know what?
Yeah.
I want to talk about this because I just kind of thought about it. So that $32,000, so Starlet said that, okay? I'm starting to wonder, yeah. I'm starting to get suspicious about this lady, and I'm just Starlet. Being super, perhaps, conspiracy theorist over here, but I'm thinking, okay, so the only reason that investigators really knew that information was because Starlet told them. And yeah. And first of all, that was in 2005 and they went missing in 2009. So it's 4 years later. So you're telling me that they hung on to $32,000 in cash from that lawsuit whenever they were having financial problems? I'm starting to kind of question this. So I'm like, why did she want to tell the investigators that $32,000 was an explanation for why that $32,000 was actually there? I don't know. I'm feeling a little skeptical about this. All of a sudden, it just came to me and I'm like, because she was, you know, she inherited money then after this happened.
Yeah.
So I'm starting to, I don't know. Who knows? I'm just kind of thinking.
No, it is weird. Like, if you have $32,000 bankrolled and you're on hard times, why aren't you using that to help yourself get ahead?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And thinking about that suitcase that was missing. Oh, I'm so confused right now. Okay. It really just hit me. I was like, what?
Yeah. The mom's just touting off all this information.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's just like, oh yeah, this and that. Oh yeah. By the way, like, why do you know?
I don't know. I mean, she might, but I'm kind of like, oh, that's weird. Anyway.
Okay. The investigators' collective portrait on the family led them to conclude that they were quote unquote scammers, which we already mentioned, and it's quite obvious.
Yeah.
This was due to the fact that they both received disability and were plaintiffs in at least two lawsuits, also including that they were informed that the couple were planning on suing the school district from which they had withdrawn Madison out of school and had begun to homeschool her.
Yeah, and I don't know what that was about, do you?
No. I think that shows a huge sign of paranoia.
Oh, for sure.
And I think Madison, I think her talking to spirits, I think it was just some poor little girl wishing that she had friends again and was talking to imaginary friends. They seem like they kind of isolated themselves.
Yeah.
And a child's going to do what they got to do to make friends. So.
Yeah, well, also, we're about to get into theories, but I'll just talk about it now. A theory that I kind of read about this whole suing the school and taking her out of school thing was that, you know, they were both parents were exhibiting a lot of signs of mental illness that wasn't being necessarily treated. And yeah. Perhaps that was affecting Madison, as you might expect it would.
Oh, definitely.
Perhaps the teachers and people at school saw either the parents exhibiting odd behavior or Madison was saying stuff that kind of made them fearful for her safety or well-being. And then when they confronted the parents about kind of talking about this to them, because they were in such a paranoid state of mind, they were like, everyone's out to get us, and took her out of school and thought they had to begin homeschooling her. And that makes a lot of sense. But I really, other than just speculating about that, I really have no idea what the possible lawsuit against the school was really about.
Yeah, there was like little information about that, exactly what happened and why.
Yeah.
The area where they were missing is pretty rugged, with most roads not maintained by the county and is laced with dirt roads connecting old oil drilling pads. Along with rumors of dangerous cults in the area, there was confirmed white supremacist groups in the area as well.
Like we talked about.
And like we mentioned. Yeah, like we mentioned, their handyman was part of a white supremacist group.
I don't understand where these people, like, are coming from. I'm like,
I don't know.
I truly didn't realize how many white supremacists there were going around in the country, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I guess says something about, you know, my awareness, but I just didn't realize it. I thought we were beyond that level of outright pieces of trash behavior, but I guess that's definitely not the case.
You're right.
Yeah.
Looking at weather data for the time, there were a number of fairly warm days in the high 80s and a handful of cooler days sprinkled throughout that had highs in the 50s, which could help pinpoint the estimated last day the Jamesons were alive, as they had left their jackets in the car. It also rained heavily following their disappearance.
Yeah.
It sounds like to me, though, it's strange because I'm like, okay, they're clearly not in a good mental state, but they're in a good enough mental state to where they're packing jackets, taking their dog. They're spending time packing
Yeah.
instead of just, like, getting in and taking off.
Yeah.
So what is going
on. Yeah, I don't know. And you know, that's a good point to bring up because we didn't really talk about too much about the video of them packing up their car. And so they had, you know, the security camera that his mother put at their house because of his father. And
Right. The
video they later, you know, found that they spent like 2 hours or something preparing the car for them to go view this land. And it was them going back and forth, kind of not talking to each other. I also wonder, though, if one person's walking towards the other, can you be positive they're not saying a few things to each other? You know, everyone's always like, they didn't say a word. I'm like, maybe it's possible someone did. Or also maybe they were both in a, you know, depressed haze, or maybe they were mad at each other and they didn't really want to talk to each other. Either way, I don't think it means that they were under some spell or something.
No. Well, there's no like full footage of the video anywhere, which is kind of strange to me. There's a very small clip, but it, like you said, it's strange to watch them and how long it took for them to pack up just like for a day trip. And they make multiple trips back and forth between the truck, and even at one point end up changing their clothes. And like you mentioned, they're almost like in a trance state. They're not talking to each other. It's just kind of odd behavior.
I almost wonder, and I know I've read people say that like they're carrying the same thing sometimes, and I wonder.
Yeah, they were like unpacking and packing.
I almost wonder what they were putting in the car that they didn't want anyone else to see or to be caught on the camera, because that may be able to explain. They were putting something in a bag, like I don't know what it was that they carried back and forth. If it was like a box or a bag or something,
yeah,
it could have something in it that they would like load up in the house and then unload in the car, take the empty bag back, reload it.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a bunch of drugs they batched up, or, you know, a ton of cash they were thinking they didn't want people to see or something, that may be an explanation for why they would, like I said, I don't really, I didn't look at the video too much because I wasn't trying to read too much into it. But if it was something that could actually be loaded up, maybe it was like drugs or money.
Yeah.
Were the Jamesons lured to the area under the false pretense of seeing and likely purchasing a property and then effectively silenced for whatever personal reasons there may have been? It definitely seems like there was some tension between the family and a lot of different people. So it's possible for sure. Something odd I found was that the interior of the truck showed little signs of a dog being left unattended for more than a week. It was really messy, so it's also possible that maybe you just couldn't tell because it was so messy and cluttered. But, you know, I feel like if I left my dog in a truck for a week, he definitely would have opened up the bags of food that were in there and torn up some styrofoam cups. And that Everything. Supposedly was a puppy.
Yeah.
Or a pretty young dog. And we know little dogs are also hard to train sometimes. So I don't know. I find it odd. And it makes me wonder if that dog really had been in that car that long. And if that car was really there that long. Or when exactly they disappeared.
What? I'm wondering, how long can a dog survive without water?
Right. Well,
you know.
Right. And eating its own poop. Like, how long really can that go on? Because this might have been 12 days. I just don't. Plus, that's the other thing. I know that dogs can die in 80 degree, even it might even be less.
Yeah.
80 degree heat in the car. There were 80 degree days during that time period. And it makes me wonder, how would that dog have survived that being in the car with the windows up? I just don't understand how easily he was there surviving for 12 days. I just think it's odd. That makes me really question. Okay. And the other part of that was the tires were really muddy on the vehicle, and there had not been rain up until I think the evening of the 8th into the 9th. So that truck had...
Well, it said that it had rained after,
after
their disappearance too.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It rained after they disappeared, not before. And so it makes me wonder why there was mud on the tires. If they disappeared when they think they disappeared, why would that truck seems to have been driven after it rained, you know, because the tires were really muddy.
Right.
And wouldn't it have gotten kind of rained off? Like, wouldn't it have cleaned them a little, maybe even? I don't know.
You would think, I'm not sure, but still, that's a really good point you bring up, because I don't think they would have gone up to look at this property if it had been storming and raining that entire day.
No way. It would be way too hard. We know that those roads aren't maintained, so it's just dirt roads that are sometimes narrow, not good driving conditions. So I just don't think they would have been like, so dead set on going up there in the rain. They couldn't walk around or anything. I just think their truck might have been driven after they went missing, personally.
Right. And when we mentioned like how secluded this area is, they said it's rare to find two vehicles on the same road at the same time. It's so sparsely populated.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, like, what is making this dude want to move up to this area so bad?
Well, we know he was a hermit and a recluse, and they were trying to get away from people. Right. And they were paranoid. So, you know, perhaps they were like, just wanted to get away from society altogether, live in their storage container. I wonder if they were even planning to get electricity and running water, or what exactly they were trying for. I really don't know.
Right. Because they had stopped and asked another landowner what it takes to live up there without electricity and running water. So this is like backwoods living.
Man, they were not kidding around. No. They were trying to get off the grid. So another weird aspect of this is that the statewide Tulsa World paper printed nothing regarding the Jameson case, save one story online where it just linked to another statewide paper about the family's disappearance. Is it possible that because of who the Jamesons were or who they were perceived to be, because of that, there was very little reporting or investigation done by the state agencies? I do think that in this case, there does seem to be a little bit of dismissal of them by certain people due to the fact that they thought they were drug addicts or crazy or whatever.
Yeah, but then you look at how, like, the local police handled it. They kind of busted their
butt. That's
true. You know, so.
They really did do a good job, yeah. So, definitely the media was kind of like, meh, bunch of drug addicts went out and died in the woods. So, admittedly, the Jamesons were in an apparently fragile emotional state, but if they were planning a murder-suicide, as some people have suggested, would they have contacted the realtor at all to inform them of their going up to the property to look around? I don't know. Would they walk around the property all day and take pictures? Would they go back to the truck to plug their phone inside the car? And why would they care if their phone was dead at all if they were planning to be dead as well? Or one of them, at least. Also, why would they walk nearly 3 miles up a 1,500-foot elevation mountain, quote-unquote mountain, and down the opposite side before deciding to commit the act versus going to another very well-hidden location that was, there were tons of them in a pretty near distance? And we know that Bobby was supposedly had extremely high pain issues, and I doubt he was the type to want to just trek around, you know, 3 miles. Even if it's not a serious mountain, it's still some significant elevation and rocky terrain. Just doesn't seem likely. Also, where is the gun that they would have had with them and the tan briefcase that they were seen putting in the car on the video? How did they commit murder-suicide and then get rid of the gun and briefcase? That seems to be a little sketchy in my opinion.
Yeah, because they said it. So it wasn't uncommon for Cheryl Lynn to have her .22 caliber handgun on her, and it was in the truck. So, yeah, you don't commit murder-suicide and then dispose of the weapon after the fact. That is impossible for, like, obvious reasons.
It is, right. Okay, so, like, what are the other methods? Because it is possible that one of them thought they were out to look at land and, you know, have a nice day trip, and the other was planning on killing the other person and their daughter. But what would the methods of that be in which they would all end up face down dead in the dirt, lined up, without any sign of a weapon or, you know, I do wonder how else. I guess they could have poisoned the others and then arranged their bodies before they went and laid down beside them face down. Like, that's the only thing I can think.
Do I want to say my theory? Yeah, or are we going to wait till the end? The way they were found to me just sounds like total execution style.
Yeah.
I mean, look at it, just especially because they found a hole in the back of his skull.
Yeah, well, and everyone will say, well, they didn't find holes in the other two. I'm pretty sure their bodies were so badly decomposed that it was hard to tell anything, you know?
It's 4 years.
Yeah, in the element, supposedly, unless they were moved there, which they may have been, but regardless, they weren't kept in pristine condition or anything.
No.
They didn't even, I don't even think they really found much clothing on them. Because it had been so long and it had just fallen apart.
I think I remember hearing that when the hunters were finding the bones, they were kind of like walking around like, I found another one. And then like, I found a femur bone and I found another one. And the hunter had told, I believe it was the sheriff, let's get out of here. You know, like it freaked him out because when he had found the skull, he turned it over with his foot and noticed that it had eye sockets and was like, oh crap. And then they just kind of like continued finding parts of them. But like for the most part, it was three bodies. side by side, lined up.
Right, with parts, I guess, dragged away by animals and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So the other theory that they simply got lost in the conditions and succumbed to the elements, I really don't know about that. Would they really not, at least one of them, walk until they found a road or a house or their vehicle versus all deciding to lay face down in the dirt together to wait out the night? You know, I find that to be really, I don't understand how you can say they succumbed to the conditions unless they all just like fell off a cliff or something.
Yeah.
Which I don't think was going on.
2.7 miles away from your truck, you succumb to the elements.
And why would you? Of course, I can't try to make a logical deal out of them not being necessarily of sane mind, but I don't know why that would be the case. In all his pain, why would he walk almost 3 miles to then fall down? They just all happen to fall down face first. I find that to be very questionable. Oh, and besides the fact, like, the temperatures definitely got low, definitely low enough to suffer from hypothermia if you were ill-prepared. But, you know, he was also a smoker and would probably have had a lighter on him that he could have started a fire with. And the situation wasn't so extreme. It wasn't like Dyatlov where there's negative 40 degree weather and they're out in their underwear. I mean, he had clothes. He didn't have a jacket. But I just don't see this situation being so dire. But unless it was raining, I mean, it was raining. So that does add to it. Anyway, I just think that they could have really survived had they not just like had zero will to survive, which I just don't. I guess maybe that's possible too. They may not. That's what I'm saying. I really don't know what I think happened, because every time I start thinking one thing, I start thinking other little aspects and I'm like, well, you know, they didn't really have a big will to survive perhaps. Maybe they did, but they were obsessed with death and I don't know, dang it. Okay, but anyway. So the behavior on the surveillance footage, in my opinion, definitely shows signs of severe depression, and the weight loss that they both underwent in the months prior to their disappearance also, to me, could be a sign of severe depression and stress, which can raise cortisol, lower serotonin levels, lower dopamine and other neurotransmitters, and it has been shown to intensify depression. Also, you know, everybody does want to point out it could be drugs, and that's also definitely possible. I definitely think it was opioids for sure, and I'm sure that can also suppress appetite as well, especially if you're really heavily using them.
Well, isn't that what happens when you take an opioid? Is like it floods, maybe it's not heroin, I don't know, I'm not a drug expert, it floods your system with serotonin and dopamine, and then you like crash off of it, and then your body has a really hard time building it back up by itself or something.
Well, I mean I'm sure heroin does. I know other drugs like ecstasy and maybe every drug. Perhaps.
Sure.
I'm not positive.
Well, and let's not forget that, like, her being such a bipolar person, that's exactly what's happening. It's like your dopamine serotonin levels are just, like, so off kilter.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, you know what? Now that I think about it, let's have a really quick little anecdote. So my grandmother, for example, had some serious pain and whatnot issues in the early 90s. And it was when I was very young. She was actually, like, I think in her 50s, so she was young. And we thought she was having early onset dementia or Alzheimer's because she would, like, see things in her house. She said that there were rats running on the ceiling, and, like, she would see red eyes glowing in the dark. And she lived in this three-story townhouse that had fake balconies, so you couldn't stand on them or climb up them. And she was on the third floor and said that she woke up in the middle of the night and there was a man standing on the balcony. There was all these stories, and it used to scare the crap out of me. I thought it was ghosts or whatever. Well, come to find out, my grandma had been prescribed like 7 different medications from 7 different doctors who weren't consulting with each other. And she was experiencing drug-induced delusions and paranoia, and it was bad. So I'm like, it's definitely possible for a little bit too much medication or medication mixed with the wrong things going on in your life that you could definitely be just out of your dang noggin.
How scary is that for the people around you too? Like,
yeah,
just kind of assuming you're going absolutely insane and not having like any idea of what's actually happening.
I also don't want, and maybe I'm speaking just for myself here, but I don't want to make anybody feel like I'm trying to discount your own experiences, whatever they may have been here. But I'm just saying here, in this very situation, how many times am I going to say this? But they were obviously having emotional issues. That said, both Bobby and Sherilyn had not missed an appointment with their psychologist until the time that they disappeared. So at least on that front, they were seeming to be on top of things. Now, I don't really know if they were lying to their psychiatrist about taking their medication. Because I do think also, I read that Bobby in the truck, there were painkillers that were prescribed to somebody, not him.
Yep, they found, the reason how they found out about the handyman is that they had found prescription pill bottles in the truck, and they traced it back to that man.
Okay, so it's possible, there's so many freaking things that could have gone on here. Because like, maybe they were getting drugs from that dude too, because he can't afford to pay prescription prices on his medication. And they, maybe they stole from him. You know, who freaking knows what could have happened in this situation? I'm sorry that I'm saying this, or really have no idea. Oh, another thing that kind of made me question whether or not someone was planning a murder-suicide is that they had both purchased numerous things on eBay in like the day prior to them leaving. And not to say that that definitely means anything, but you know, it does kind of make it seem as though at least one of them expected to come back to live at their home for at least a little while.
Yeah, unless it was just like manic buying.
That's also true.
You know, like erratic behavior, impulsive behavior.
That totally could be the case too. And also, you know, maybe, well, I don't know, if one of them was going to be doing the murder-suicide, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I should even say who I would think. I would think it would probably be her that did it, but I don't know.
Well, they actually found a 22-page journal in the truck, and it was of her journaling about how much she hated Bobby and how much of a hermit he was, and the like total disdain for him. And her friend Nikki was like, no, it was just a way of her to like, you know, hash out her anger. It was more of a therapeutic type thing for her. But why bring that along?
Yeah. I don't know, unless you're just thinking, oh, well, I'm going to write in the car. I don't know, but that seemed... Oh, yeah, so then you're saying...
Maybe he found it and got mad.
Yeah, yeah, I see where you're going with that one, because I was like, yeah, so then she definitely did it, and then I was thinking, no, wait, then he could have seen it. I mean, yeah, who freaking knows? But, like, in either case, if either of them were going to do it, I don't know why they would have let anyone know they were going out there, unless they wanted someone to find them. But then why would they have gone so far away from that location? So that doesn't really make a lot of sense. But also, how did they do it in order to end up the way they ended up? I just don't see a very plausible way, unless they really did just... One of them made the other two drink some Kool-Aid, then the killer drank some Kool-Aid and laid down as they were taking their last dying breath. Well, that's the only thing I can think that would... Okay.
What about this? What if one of them, or maybe they had a pact or something, what if they like OD'd on purpose or took something drug-wise and gave it to their daughter as well? And that would explain like why they were face down, side by side, and not necessarily scattered or... you know, huddled together, like if they were succumbing to the elements. But and that would explain why the gun wasn't found, possibly.
Okay.
Because there may be a need for one.
Yeah. And I mean, who knows what she did with it? Also, who knows what happened to the suitcase, but maybe they left it somewhere. You know, maybe there was, in the suitcase, there was everything, all their drug stuff they needed, and they left it somewhere, and they, who knows where. But, and then they were just kind of taking this, like, one last walkabout before they ended their lives. That could definitely be plausible.
Well, they found those photos of Madison on a BlackBerry. It was interesting that they were actually able to find the rock formation that it was taken on.
Yeah.
The photos show her in this like weird arms crossed, and some people say, oh, that's just her smiling. I'm like, no, that's clearly her like protesting having her picture taken. And a lot of people speculate that it wasn't even the parents taking the photo, that it was someone else forcing her to pose like that.
Yeah.
And in the photo, she does look distressed.
It also could have been her drug.
Yeah.
She could have been on drugs and feeling weird, and they could have been on drugs, and she's like scared and doesn't want to be there and just wants to go home. I'm not trying to say 100% these parents killed their kid or anything, but it's, you can't discount the fact that it's possible. You know, in this situation, I truly cannot tell you that I think one thing or the other.
Yeah.
And I do think there are definitely some suspicious people going around on either side of Sherilyn's her friends. Bobby's dad and his mom and the other family members definitely are suspicious. Or maybe they just were like, oh, they're gone, let me get all the money. And her friend was just kind of bored, like you said, and, you know, took her friendship a little too far.
Yeah.
Influenced Sherilyn when she was already at a pretty fragile state of mind. You know, that's what's so sad about a lot of these situations that we talk about, where people, mental health really truly is the biggest issue. And I mean, it sucks though, because they were apparently trying to get help for it. So I just don't understand what went wrong here, but something obviously went wrong. Unless their mental health, again, just kind of put them like so many other people that we talk about in a more vulnerable position in which crappy people come and take advantage of that, because that's also definitely a possible scenario here. They were not, you know, 100% of sound mind, and somebody realized that and thought, I can get $32,000 from these people. Who knows? I have no idea, because I do wonder if his mom was being accurate with that $32,000 thing, if maybe the other 32 was what was in the suitcase. Who knows? Anyway, I'm going to stop speculating. I'm not going to stop speculating, but let's get going here. So, was a cult really to blame? Now, a month prior to the family's disappearance, a nearby pastor, Carol Daniels, was found brutally murdered in her church in what police described as the most horrific scene they'd ever experienced. Daniels' nude and mutilated body was found behind the altar in a crucifix position. I was like, what the heck? When I heard that, that definitely makes me wonder what the heck's going on around that area. That seems like, surely that pastor didn't have a parishioner that was just so
angry
that they did that kind of thing. That's pretty sadistic.
Yeah.
We can't get away from sadism in this podcast. Okay. And here's where we're going to get a little more
fringy.
Yeah. Fringe theory. The city just south of where the Jamesons' bodies were discovered was called Kinta. And another city, and I mean, these cities are so interestingly named. I'm sure it's some sort of Native American name, but anyway, another city, Anadarko, which I'm sure I'm saying incorrectly, they lie on the 35th parallel north, which is a circle of latitude that crosses some critically important historical areas of the planet that include Tibet, Hiroshima, Pakistan, Iraq, Afghanistan, Cyprus, Tunisia, and Algeria. The 35th parallel has been noted by mystics as a line of tragedy and point to the Alfred E. Murrah Federal Building as an example of that, which we know that Timothy McVeigh committed his domestic terrorism act at that building. So, you know, I think you said there was another one. There's like some other murders and...
So there was another missing case of a man. I think it was just a few months prior to this. Same situation. Truck found abandoned on the side of the road. No, like, real cause of death.
Okay, so, you know, I think there's definitely some weird stuff that goes on this line of 35th parallel. Is it a coincidence? Maybe. Is it something deeper, like a, you know, frequency, like Shai said when we were talking about it earlier? Is it some sort of, you know, place where there's like a certain frequency that allows for maybe like a dimensional overlap or something, where our dimension overlaps with some other dimension where something bizarre happens and there are things that we can't explain? I really don't know. You know, I feel like in this situation, there's really nothing that's too crazy as far as an explanation for what happened to this family.
Right.
And obviously, it's tragic. They also could have possibly, you know, run into like a meth operation or some sort of other activity that resulted in someone wanting to kill them or rob them or whatever. And maybe they had more money and they didn't realize that they had a whole other stash of cash in the truck. It does definitely look, based off their vehicle, like they were stopped by somebody. It just seems that way. Plus, you have the footprints that seem to just lead from the truck to the tree where they took the picture of Madison and then back to the car. Perhaps they were going down, back down. I just don't know. And because, I mean, I say some things that completely contradict the other things that I've said. But, you know.
Yeah.
There was also the second set of tire prints that man, if he's telling the truth, there was a fresh set of tire prints beside their truck. I don't know what happened to these poor people.
One thing I found interesting was that they said that the couple had dual computer screens and that it said that prolonged exposure to that much computer screen time can cause dopamine and serotonin levels to plummet severely. So they can spend hours and hours and hours on the computer. So their sensory overload, it's a possibility that like it just fried their brain and it just kind of like sent them over the deep end, you know? So So like it would be super interesting, I think, to release their search history in this time period.
Yeah.
Finding maybe what were they buying on eBay? Was it items that correlated with like what they wanted to do in life, or was it just a bunch of random products?
Oh, well, I'll tell you some of the things that they bought. She bought two college level chemistry books. She bought a bunch of essential oils. She bought beakers and like eyedroppers.
To make meth?
Well, I don't know. Do you use essential oil to make meth? Maybe that was just for something unrelated.
Maybe they were coming out with some lavender-scented meth.
Something I read was like, you don't need a college-level chemistry book to figure out how to make meth. Maybe they were making something else. They could have been making anything. I mean, it could have been drugs. It could have been some sort of...
Bath oil?
bath oil, yeah. I don't want to say bath salts because that is a drug too, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know. But those are some of the last things that she bought on eBay. And the people I was... Because I was looking on Web Sleuths and they... Some of those people go deep, man. And they were saying they somehow got a hold of her eBay purchases. And maybe they just knew her eBay name. But that she was like really diligent about giving feedback on all the things that she would buy on eBay. But on the chemistry books, she didn't give any feedback whatsoever. Who knows?
I think that's just really suspicious.
Yeah. Maybe they were concocting something to kill themselves with. I don't know. You know, I really don't know. I don't know why you would need that many chemistry books, though, but it's all suspicious.
So I think the history of the computer searches would be really interesting within this time frame.
Yeah. We have eBay, but we don't have their computer searches. I don't know. I wonder. I'm like, maybe one day I'll FOIA it and maybe they have them. They surely do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as much as I would love to tell you that... these deaths were explained, you know, I don't think I have an answer for you, and I don't know what happened, and I don't think Shai has her ideas.
I think it's just like a combination of, like, you know, prescription pills, drug use, obvious mental disorder, and paranoia. I think that being hard up for cash, even though they had $32,000 on them.
Yeah.
Unless
it was planted there.
Yeah, yeah. So I think they were executed.
Why would you take all your cash to go kill yourself also?
You would not.
That's another question. Yeah, so I'm... So do you think that someone else killed them, though?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I think that the way their bodies were laid out is very execution style, like I said.
Yeah.
The missing briefcase, you know, I don't know. Their killer's that smart. Maybe I'm...
I don't know.
Maybe I'm smart enough to be a killer. I don't know.
Well, let's not talk about that. Let's not go down that road.
Making a murder. Yeah, and I think Cheryl Lynn just kind of fell off the deep end. I think her getting involved in all that, like, witchcraft stuff kind of, like, drove even deeper. So, yeah, I just think it was a perfect storm of just anything and everything that could go possibly wrong in the situation.
It was definitely a perfect storm of crap. I'm, like, really, I'm 50-50. Someone probably killed them. There's also at least a 40% chance in my mind that they somehow did this to themselves.
Yeah.
I really hope they didn't just, well, I actually, I don't know which I hope. I don't hope either. Obviously, either, both situations are horrible. Both scenarios are terrible. Unfortunately, you know, no matter what was going on with Bobby and Sherilyn, Madison was a 6-year-old girl that had her life taken from her at 6 years old. And also was probably in a pretty stressful situation before that. So unfortunate all around. And, you know, it's definitely tragic. And, you know, whatever happened to the family, I hope they are now in a better place. Hopefully not suffering the way they were here, because it was definitely unfortunate circumstances all around.
Yeah.
So that's the closure for now, at least, of the Jameson family.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope we find out more. Surely the police have somewhat more information that we just don't know, but who knows? So yeah. Okay. We're done.
Yeah, that was the Jameson family murders. Please tell us what your theories are after listening to the podcast. We're super curious what y'all have to think about this. Go post it up on the Facebook page, on the Instagram. Let us know what you think happened out there.
Yeah. I'm so ready to hear some theories that I have not thought of.
Yes.
Please. With some serious idea behind it, because I'm totally baffled at this point.
Baffled.
So, thank you guys for listening. We very much appreciate it. I'm really digging everybody's feedback lately. I feel so excited about where we are going with the podcast. And every week, I just get a little more excited. So yeah, if you could please just share the crap out of it wherever you can. It really helps us out. If we just get exposed to one of your acquaintances or friends, it makes, you know, a huge difference for us. So please do that if you can. We are on Gmail. You can email us any ideas that you have for the show or any questions or concerns, etc. Positive as much as possible, please. I can't take a lot of derision. We're at creepitrealpod@gmail.com. And you can find us on Facebook at Creep It Real.
All right, y'all. Have a wonderful weekend.
Shy's about to go on vacation.
It's out.
Yep, yippity-doo. So everybody, we'll see you next week. Creep It Real, and we'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.